Hello, this is Kirsty Rice from Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. This podcast is brought to you by the Shangri-La Shanghai, the hotel that stole my heart on the weekend by providing me with the best, and yes, I mean the best hotel room I have ever stayed in. I know what you're thinking. She has to say that, but oh my God, the view, the windows, the bed. Anyway, back to the podcast. Today, I'm back in Doha, Qatar, and Nikki is back in Hamburg, Germany after our big fat expat meetup in Shanghai. Let's go and say hello, shall we? Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? Although I'm a tiny bit jet-lagged, and that may or may not be because I might have had too many Proseccos and dumplings in Shanghai.
Yes.
It's grey and drizzling here, so an excellent way to reorient myself to the northern European springtime. Despite getting a weather warning on my phone yesterday saying there would be a significant increase in temperature tomorrow in Hamburg, this has not yet come to pass.
Oh, well, you need to come to Doha where it's 38 degrees at 8 o'clock in the morning.
No. Don't tell me. I am jealous. See, I know you don't like it, but I am jealous.
But I hear you on the dumplings and the Prosecco. There were a lot of dumplings and a lot of Prosecco. So, big fat expat meetup, which, of course, we had at the Shangri-La Shanghai in the 1515 room, which was spectacular. Tell me, what was your favourite part of the Big Fat Expat Meetup?
Oh, that's so hard. I loved it all. The popcorn chicken was a highlight. Who knew it meant actually chicken and popcorn? I was chatting with someone and not eating at all when someone brought this to my attention. I immediately sampled a piece and it was actually quite glorious. I had so many great conversations with the people who were there. One in particular was so long and intense, and I might have actually been talking at her rather than with her after I got all excited when she told me what she did. She works with Chinese children with ADHD on looking at solutions for helping them. So it was so interesting because all my experiences with Western children with ADHD. So I was really interested in seeing what they did and if they did things differently. So we were talking a lot about one of my pet subjects, which is international special needs children and special needs children as expats. So I was talking with her for ages and ages about that. So I really enjoyed that conversation. But I enjoyed so many conversations. But I think, highlight. So when I had remembered cleverly to Facebook Live your blog post reading, and you were talking about your Chinese ancestry, and you're reading the post, the expat Mongol post, and I think, and you looked up and I said, oh, your mum's watching. And she said, oh, my mum's watching. And I think it just made it a little bit more emotional and made it all feel a little bit more intimate. And I just, that was kind of one of my favourite parts of the night.
I know. Technology is an amazing thing when you can be standing in a room with women from all over the world. I mean, we had women from Denmark, from the US, from Canada, from Australia. We had people that had flown in from Manila, people who'd flown in from Thailand. And to be standing there talking about your Chinese ancestry. I had a great-great-grandfather who was born in Shanghai, and that was sort of what the expat mongrel was about, but there was a bit about growing up in Renmark. And yes, to look up and you say, I'm doing Facebook Live, as much as that freaked me out.
That's why I didn't tell you that part.
I'm not good at that stuff. But then when you said, and your mum's watching, I mean, technology is an amazing thing, isn't it? That my mum could watch that live right there when it was happening.
I know, and you're totally the ultimate expat because really you've never lived there. You lived in all these places, but still we go to Shanghai and you still have some sort of tie to the city. Like you just pull everything out of nowhere. It's amazing. So what about you? What was your favourite part of the night?
My favourite part was when I met a couple of fantastic women from Guatemala and Mexico, and they were great friends. Sorry, Guatemala and Mexico, and they were both great friends. They have this really cool shopping tour business, but they had come along to a Big Fat Expat Meetup, and I know, you know, obviously everyone who's listening now is podcast driven, whereas these ladies had seen something I'd done on Facebook with Sarah maybe a year or two ago, where we'd done Kiki and Sasha, maybe 2 years ago now that I think about it, who were these, you know, privileged, overindulged expat women. You know, they were the ultimate stereotype of expat women, and we used to do videos of Kiki and Sasha and, you know, them talking about the struggles and trials of their expat life. And these two fantastic women came up and just started impersonating Kiki and Sasha and talked about how they quite often revert to their alter egos of Kiki and Sasha, and then started doing it. And, oh, my gosh, I just thought they were so funny, and I just loved it for how you can do something and you send it off into the internet and you don't sort of think about it again. And then to find out that someone's still getting a little bit of joy and still having a giggle, that to me was my favourite part for sure.
The best part was when you said, wait, stop. And you went and grabbed your phone and videoed. You said, I have to show Sarah.
And Sarah did love it. Like, I sent her a message saying, Sarah, I had to video this. There's no way I could retell this story and give it credit. And I'd videoed the two girls being Kiki and Sasha. And Sarah just sent back a stream of emoticon laughing, saying this, they are just too funny. Okay, so this week on the podcast, Nikki, because we were staying at the Shangri-La and we were there together, we were talking about expats in hotels and sort of that whole expat family that happens within a hotel. And we were both really quite fascinated with people who move within the industry to sort of find out, well, what does that expat life look like? So you went off and spoke to quite a few members of staff and you came back with a couple of interviews.
I did. I spoke to Ruby, who was the events manager at the Shangri-La, and she'd had a very big Australian group in the week before, so we had a little bit of laughs about that. And the other interview I'm going to play today is from Stephen, who is Canadian but very luckily is married to an Australian. And he is the director of food and beverage, so he was a good man to know.
Okay, so let's listen to Ruby then.
You know, what fascinates me is, you know, how big the country is and the people. And, I mean, of course, it's culture shock for me too, you know, coming from Singapore, you know, going to Beijing. Everything is so massive and, you know, people, you don't even know how to cross the road, you know, when you get there. I mean, Singapore, it's like the whole year is summer. You know, when you get there, it's, you know, the four seasons. Of course, you know, for us, we can buy more clothes and all that. We feel a bit more fashion, you know, that kind. So, I ended up in Beijing, you know, and also looking forward to the Olympics back then. So, you know, slowly, you know, build your relationship with your team, your my friends and all that. I was quite fortunate because I've got friends in Beijing, which I knew only when I signed the contract. So when I moved there, yeah, it was quite not that difficult for me because I speak Mandarin also, and I've got a few friends there who we can actually, I can actually get feedback from or, you know, ask for help. I think as a single person, you know, moving, you know, it's much easier. You know, you don't have so much worries and all that. And I was quite fortunate because when I arrived Beijing, you know, the hotel Carrie in Beijing, they actually treated me very well. I felt very welcomed. You know, when I arrived at the airport, you know, I've got my assistant director waiting for me and bringing me to the hotel in the limo and then making sure that I'm comfortable. And then I've got another friend in another Shangri-La in Beijing. We haven't met for a few years. So, you know, Singapore is a small country. You know, we don't even meet in Singapore, but we meet in China, you know. And even coming to Shanghai 4 years ago, the general manager, you know, I knew him 10 years ago, you know, in another hotel group. So it's like, you know, it's a small world, you know. So
the hotel world is a small world as well.
Yes,
within the...
And then within the group also, because, you know, you get moved, you know, to different properties, but you may end up in the same property after, 5 to 10 years. If you work in Shangri-La long enough. So I've been working like 12 years. This property, 4 years. I came in 2013, January.
And what's your role here?
I'm the director of events, you know, doing events, regardless of, you know, handling events, handling groups, weddings, also under my care, and outside catering or any major government officials that visits and, you know, forums and all that. Yeah.
So what's your favorite event that you've held at Shangri-La?
Yeah. A lot, actually. Every event is very challenging and very interesting because we get exposed. I mean, Shangri-La as a group, I must say, you know, the type of events we handle is it's very wide range. You know, of course, we do have small board meetings, you know, 20 persons, but they're all global CEOs or, you know, top executives. And we also have, like, you know, we did the conference, you know, for ministers, you know, in Beijing, you know, government officials, where all the ministers and high-level security, the president's visit, the king's visit, the princess, you know, her royal highness coming and all that. And we've got celebrities, you know, and Mr. Tom Cruise, you know, and all that. So, you know, sometimes, you know, after he has said, well, so every event is very different and every group that we're handling, I mean, it's very fascinating, the whole job that, you know, I'm in, you know, especially in Shangri-La.
Where's the best food? Well, tell me, Ruby.
Jing'an Shangri-La.
Outside the Jing'an Shangri-La.
No, if you compare the dim sum, I still like our dim sum, to be very frank. I've tried a few good ones, you know, in town, but I still like Jing'an Shangri-La's Summer Palace dim sum. Zhonghua and English, there is a lot of English-speaking Chinese in Shanghai. And, you know, there's a lot of expats and foreigners in Shanghai too. So I don't find it, you know, a chore or a trouble communicating with people in Shanghai, actually. Yeah, I mean, they're so, you know, they're quite well educated, actually. They're, you know, if you're talking about language,
where to next? Where after Shanghai?
I have no idea, because I have not imagined myself out of these two major cities, actually. You know, if you ask me to go traveling, definitely no problem. You know, Harbin, you name it, you know, Inner Mongolia, I've been there, you know, to different cities. But working there, I have not, because I always feel that, like, my mission is still not completed here. There's still so much more that is coming up, you know, with, you know, other hotels coming up. You know, we have to think of strategies, you know, to counteract and all that, and how to maintain and improve our, you know, facilities, I mean, services and, you know, offerings. So, yeah, I have never thought of, you know, moving to
well, it's a very loyal employee.
No, I think after a while, you know, you would feel that, you know, if you go to other properties, regardless of what other properties, smaller ones or more exclusive ones, it's very different from the family here. I mean, as in the Shangri-La family. So probably because I'm used to it, you know, maybe find me.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I tell you what I loved about Ruby is she really made me think when she was talking about the culture shock of moving. You don't think about how moving within Asia and within the hotel industry, that people, there's still that exact same level of culture shock.
Yes. And she's saying, you know, she already spoke Mandarin, but, you know, she was looking for something different and was such a big culture shock for her. But, yeah, I agree. The way she talked about the Shangri-La and the way they greeted her and looked after her, they made her feel like a special hotel guest.
Oh, yeah, when she said how they picked her up. Yeah, that was very good. And that was a common theme at the Shangri-La, wasn't it? That
it was.
You know, that everyone who started working for them had really felt they'd been very well looked after when they'd arrived. Because the thing is, we as expats arrive new at hotels quite often. You know, if you haven't got your housing sorted out or you don't know anyone that's living in the place, your first point of call is a hotel for a couple of days to get yourself sorted. But I reckon most expats wouldn't think about the fact that the people that are looking after them in those hotels are in exactly the same position.
Yeah, and have done exactly the same thing quite often, which shows that they can be so empathetic and often quite helpful.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought she was great. Also, as a single woman, I think it's great to show you that you can travel and work like that. I mean, that's just something that wouldn't have happened, you know, 25 years ago.
Yes, the lead expat, being the only expat, but also being a woman. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we listen to Stephen now? So Stephen is the director of food and beverage. So he's responsible for all the food and beverage in the entire hotel, all the restaurants, all the events, all the conferences, all the everything. Let's have a listen to Stephen.
I'm Canadian originally, but I've worked kind of in London. Then I joined Sydney, Australia. I joined Shangri-La there. I've been with Shangri-La for 10 years now. And this is my first expat move with Shangri-La. So I started here almost 10 months to the day, actually. So this was my first Chinese experience and first real expat experience, although I've worked around the world a lot of my life. So I guess Shangri-La, I got here on my first day. They picked me up in a car, drove me to the hotel. When I walked into the hotel, I had a book based on all what is good to see, what is nice to see. And you kind of sink into the bed on your first night in Shanghai. And I was like, okay, I did it, right? So for me, I guess the move has been really, really positive. But it also helps that I really enjoy Shanghai. It's an amazing electric city. So.
And what about your wife? How has she found the move?
She loves it. absolutely loves it. So,
is she also Canadian?
No, she's Australian.
Okay.
So
you're lucky then. You married her to Australia. Yeah.
She might miss the beach a little bit. She's a Perth girl. We moved to Sydney. We met in Sydney and been in Sydney for, lived in Sydney for 18 years. So Sydney, my daughter's Australian and my wife's Australian. So it's kind of a neat move here to a different culture and a really eye-opening for my daughter. She's picking up Mandarin a lot faster than I am. And the school's been great. The school's had a support group with the ladies. I think Shanghai does expats really well. I think they have a really good expat culture and a very supportive one. So I think there is. The school right away took in and you get assigned a friend. So my wife got assigned a friend right away and they do weekly catch-ups and coffees and I want her life. but the reason she also has picked up Mandarin a lot quicker, and I guess the reason for that is that she gets thrown into it. So in my world, there's quite a few people that speak English and that is easier helped out. In her world, there's no one. So yeah, being independent, like we both celebrate when we had Alipay. We got Alipay. It was a big thing. Can pay by WeChat, another big hurdle in our lives, right? And I guess that's the one thing that was a little offsetting for me is that I'm a very independent person. And this is the first time I've lived in a country that English was not his first language. That was a hurdle that you might not think is that tough, but being independent and being like getting your own mobile phone, purchasing your own SIM card, doing all those kind of things is not really physically possible. But then when it comes to my wife, it has to be physically possible. And just getting around the city with a 5-year-old daughter is a challenge. So that, there's little things that are that's kind of a little bit harder, but it's as long as you laugh, and we laugh a lot, and you don't take yourself too seriously, it's a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
You are the food and beverage director, so I know you're going to tell me the best place to eat is here.
Absolutely.
But outside of here, we had a very nice dim sum lunch here today in the Summer Palace.
Yes.
But outside of here, what kind of food do you like to eat in Shanghai?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I would say because Calypso is my restaurant and it's technically outside this hotel, that is the number one place outside the hotel to eat.
Okay.
But every Sunday... I take Sundays off, and every Sunday I got a electric scooter. That's what you do here. And I fully charge it on Saturday night, and then me and my daughter go Sunday morning because she wakes her room and my wife gets to sleep in, and we go street food. I love street food. I love dumpling street food. I love pancake street food. I love anything. I go for, when I drive, I look for a really dirty, if the pavement in front of it is full of oil and dirt, that's where we eat.
That's the best food.
Because it is the busiest. And I live by it, and I've never felt ill, I've never nothing, and I don't know what I've eaten, but it's good. And so I think for Sunday morning breakfast, It is amazing. And the little places that we find that are like just little holes with one person, and the dumplings and everything that I've eaten is brilliant. So, but Shanghai has such an eating culture. So they celebrate everything by eating. It's an amazing thing to be food and beverage, and they celebrate everything by eating.
So right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we've done everything from Japanese to Chinese to buffets to the Shanghai has so many restaurants, so you cannot keep up. To Sunday brunches, to drinking champagne and eating, yeah, everything, caviar, everything. So it can be, it's just a lot of fun. So I would say the best place to eat again is Jing'an Shangri-La.
And how long do you plan to stay, or would you plan to continue this journey into these different kinds of cultures?
Now I've done it once, I'm not stopping. I really like Shanghai. I would like this journey to stay a while. I guess on my bucket list of places that I wanted to live in and do, I don't know if Shanghai was originally on one of them. It certainly has become one very quickly. Being here is kind of really, it's a really electric city. It's really neat. And having such a different culture and having my daughter experience it, I think it grows them so much more. And them realizing that the world is so small. And I think that is invaluable for her life. So as long as she is still happy and she's still kicking around, we'll try as many different cultures for her as we possibly can. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, so I agree with Stephen in that one of the things he said, which I thought was so true, is that Shanghai does expats really well. And I think that's really good info to have because, you know, there are some countries you go to where they don't do expats really well. They're not conducive to expats and they're not really happy about expats. And I think there's a lot of things you don't realise work so incredibly well, and one being the metro and catching the metro. Do you know, my hometown has just had 5,000 football supporters go to Shanghai, all of whom were not, I won't say all of them, but if you're in the Facebook groups of those, you know, football club supporters, there were lots of comments where you could tell there were people that weren't great travellers and they were all worried about, you know, vaccinations and, you know, how to get from A to B, things that probably expats don't even consider. But they all managed to catch the metro and get on a bullet train to somewhere and, you know, eat and find the way around. I think quite often with China you're a little bit wary about those things because of the language barrier, but definitely wasn't the case, was it?
No, it was easy. I mean, there wasn't necessarily a lot of English spoken in every place, but there was enough and there were signs and everything was quite straightforward, so it was easy to do. And the metro was quite amazing.
Yes, yes. And we need to explain the whole thing about WeChat, why he was so excited about being able to get
Alipay.
Yes. So, Nikki, what did we learn about Shanghai and WeChat over the weekend?
And China. So when I arrived at the airport, I went and I got a Chinese SIM card and in the arrival section where before you get your baggage. And the lady said to me, okay, China, no Facebook, no Gmail, no Google. I was like, okay, got it. There is a way that you can get around that. But most people in China use WeChat as opposed to Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And it sort of combines all those things together, but it also has a payment option. It's like the ultimate social media tool.
It is.
In one.
And, you know, someone explained it to me saying that China almost benefited from having that lapse with Facebook in that while everyone else jumped onto all these social media platforms, because they had time before WeChat came about, they had time to design the ultimate app. And it really is in that our expat friends, when we had our big fat expat meetup, you know, women were explaining to us that all through WeChat they order their groceries and have their groceries delivered, that they can shop online at the equivalent of Amazon. What's it called again?
Alibaba,
so they can shop on Alibaba and know that it, something will turn up at their house within, you know, 24 to 48 hours. And people were telling me that young Chinese people do not use cash at all. They survive solely through WeChat. They pay everything through WeChat, and that's how everything happens. And I remember watching, bizarrely on Facebook, but it was a... it was like a little 5-minute video. I'll go and see if I can find it and share it. But it was all about how WeChat is so clever, because it starts to look at that information of the type of food that you're eating when you're going out and the type of things you're buying when you're doing that, and how it will then highlight those things to you all the time. Hey, you know, you love prawn dumplings. The best prawn dumplings at blah 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 are 2 minutes away, or you love this, or you do this. I just think it's so clever.
And it was really interesting, because in the hotel I met with, when they were arranging the interviews for me and to meet the people, I would say, oh, I've got WeChat, and they'd say, oh, that's fine, I'll just hook you up in this group. And all of a sudden they'd just WeChat me in and do an introduction, and then I'd arrange to meet someone in a different part of the hotel. And we had all these different WeChat talking groups going, with the events department, with all these different departments, and with Stephen, the F&B director. And he was at the game on Sunday that we went to. Obviously his wife's Australian, so they went along. So I messaged him on Sunday and I said, are you here? And he said, yeah. But he sent me a photo. He said, here I am. So, you know, it's just, it's so embedded and enmeshed in everyone's lives. Like, they used, even though they're at work, they were using WeChat. They weren't using a work-based system. They were using WeChat to communicate with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Now, back to Stephen. How much did you want to be Stephen's daughter?
Get my dad to take me every Sunday just to all the best places to eat.
I know. Like, what an amazing memory, like the memories he's creating for his child of, hey, can you remember, Dad, when we used to get on the electric scooter and you'd take me all around Shanghai and we'd find the best places to eat together? I mean, that's bliss right there.
It's quite amazing, yeah. Isn't it? It is. And he was just super pumped about it. So I just thought it was such a lovely part of the story.
Yeah, and I really hope that he is taking lots of photos of that, because that's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. And I like that his wife gets to sleep in.
Yes.
That's another favourite part of the story.
That was my favourite bit too.
So we stayed in these most amazing rooms, Kirsty, you and G, and I was in one on another floor. And they had these double-sided glass walls. And I know you did a Facebook live of one, and I think there's an Instagram post as well that I put up, yeah, of my room. But the views were just incredible. I mean, Shanghai is such a city. Like, Hamburg has no high rise. I know Doha probably has high rise, but Hamburg has none. And like, if you're on the fifth floor, you can pretty much see everything because there's not many fifth floors. But that was so incredible.
Yeah.
And to go up to the Horizon Lounge, which was on the 55th floor of the Shangri-La, and have some drinks or also breakfast, and just look out and just go, wow. Wow. What a city.
It was. And do you know what I realised? I think, you know, because I'm a kid from the country, I think quite often it's very easy to kind of lump yourself in a group. I'm a city girl, or I'm a country girl, or I like this sort of life and I don't like that sort of life. And like, you know, we have a place at the beach and we adore to just go for walks on the beach. We love it that it's quiet. We love that we've got this little village feel. And, you know, we always sort of keep scooting back to that and going back to that, trying to, you know, that we're creating this little home. And then you get on a plane and you go to Shanghai and you go to the Shangri-La and you walk into your room and it's, you know, 180 degrees of just a view of a massive, thriving metropolis, and you're like, I love this. I want this all the time. This is amazing. Do you know, it just goes to show you can think that you like a particular thing, and that's the beautiful thing about travel, isn't it? Is that your senses get awoken to a different way of living.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I felt the same way. It was such an amazing vibe in the city as well when you're out at night, and I thought it was amazing.
And the location, I loved Shanghai. The location of that hotel was perfect too. And I mean, I know people are going to think, oh God, they're harping on about this hotel because they went and stayed there and whatever. But it really was, to me, the ultimate of just lots of different restaurants you could go to if you wish to. Great location. You know, we were able to catch the metro off to the stadium that we went to. I reckon, Nikki, how long did it take us to do that? My mum was asking, and I reckon it was about 20 minutes tops.
Yeah, I think it was about 20 minutes. We changed trains once on that way, but yes, yeah. I think it was 20 minutes. It was like 5 minutes on the metro to the Bund, which is the down on the river where all the action happens.
Yes.
And it was less than 5 minute walk to the hotel with the Port Adelaide players. And so how could you get a better location?
And that was the most exciting bit, is that we were staying in the same area as the Port Adelaide players. And so I kept seeing them. And, yes, that was very exciting, as only another fanatical Port Adelaide supporter would understand.
Well, I was amongst the fanatical Port Adelaide fans on Sunday. And I have come to understand you a little bit more now. I've seen you in your natural sporting environment.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was so, so good, and I would definitely want to go back and do it again, and I would definitely go back and stay at the Shangri-La again because that place was amazing. Okay, Nikki, moving on. This week, have you discovered any podcasts since you've been back? What have you been listening to?
Well, I have been listening on and off for a little while to something called the Karen and Ellen Letters. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
So it's two teenage girls living in Oakland, California, and it's a year of them writing letters to their landlord, and it's sort of in the 80s, so it's before email or anything, and it's quite freaking funny.
So is it real? Like, is it...
Yes, it's real. So the letters were given as a file folder full of photocopied handwritten letters were given to the guy that runs the podcast as a birthday present in about 2005. And the present giver said, trust me, you'll love it. So he said the folder led to hours upon hours of hysterical laughter. Then there was a successful blog, and then there was a live performance. And then he went on a 7-year journey to validate the authenticity, to prove that the letters were real. And now 12 years after he first got them, there's a podcast. So I guess they've been famous in the past, but I wasn't aware of them in their past life. But now they're coming back as a podcast. And the podcast tagline includes the podcast that will make you appreciate the stupid people in your life. And there's two types of episodes. So there's shorter ones where the letters are read by actors, which is so funny. And then there's longer episodes where there's a group of other podcast hosts join, and then they talk about the letters. But Karen and Ellen write letters to their landlord, Mark, and Mark writes back. And it's about so many things. But it starts by including, by them moving to this house and including, you know, what things they're not going to pay for. So, you know, dear Mark, thank you for saying you would pay for a new refrigerator light. I also bought an ice tray for the fridge, and I also bought cleaning products, and also bought this. So, you know, the total that I will deduct from my rent is $158.
No.
And it just goes on. And then there's another letter a little bit later that says, dear Mark, I ran into some tenants of some other houses that you own, and they said you deliver free firewood to them. You know, why can't we have free firewood too? And then Mark writes back, dear Karen, yes, I deliver free firewood to some of my tenants because they have fireplaces.
Oh,
your house does not have a fireplace. And it's just they are very, very funny, and it's just something easy to listen to, you know, when you're traveling, or sort of, it's not heavy, you don't have to concentrate, you can just sort of listen and laugh. So that was me for the week. Not very cerebral, but a little bit funny.
No, that's
so what
good.
About you?
I'm going to download that one. That sounds good. Okay, so I've been listening to the Better Reading podcast, and they've had the usual suspects from a country that's large in size and small in population, maybe, means that you see similar people arise all the time on, you know, certain Australian podcasts. And this is definitely the case with women who are writing books at the moment. So I've really enjoyed podcasts with Nikki Gemmell and Carolyn Ovington and Mia Friedman and Tracy Spicer, because they are all promoting their books at the moment. But I thought one of the really interesting ones was with Carolyn Ovington, and she sort of raised the point about how writers now have a very public presence, and that, you know, we didn't know what Enid Blyton looked like, or Agatha Christie. You know, we just read the books and loved their books, but we didn't have that same presence about them. But it was interesting. She talked about her two Walkleys, and she reminded me of the story of Norma Corey. Can you remember that, Nikki?
Oh, vaguely. Yeah. Can you remind me?
So this woman had written this incredible story about being in the...
a refugee?
Yeah, no, being in the Middle East and a friend with an honour killing and, you know, and talked all about her life there. And it turns out she was actually born and raised in Chicago.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, and Carolyn wrote a whole book about her, but I think there's a doc that you can see if you're interested in that story. It also made me remember, because someone told me years ago that I needed to read Carolyn Overington's book called Only in New York. Have you read that?
I haven't read that. I need to read more Carolyn Overington books because I do enjoy them, and I haven't read enough.
But I remember when someone told me to read it, it was back when I was, you know, thinking about writing a book. And, you know, someone said, oh, you should read Only in New York. It's all about when she moved and she had two young children and she was working in New York, and it's sort of, you know, a day in the life of, you know, her experience of doing that. And she also talks about how at that time there were a lot of books like that there was Almost French, and that there was Holy Cow, which was written by Sarah McDonald when she went to India. And I kind of had this moment, because I am really bad for hearing those things and going, well, I don't need to write one because everybody else has written one, and so why would you write one? But she kind of made me realise, well, no, it doesn't mean you shouldn't write one. Big deal if other people have written one. Yours is going to be different because it's going to be your story and your life. So it's a completely different scenario. So I kind of felt enthused again to keep writing in that way. But, yeah, I just
excellent. And everyone will be very glad to hear that, because in case you haven't heard yet, the people who attended the Big Fat Expat Meetup in Shanghai got to hear the first chapter of Kirsty's book.
They did. That was all a bit
That was
scary.
Not on Facebook Live.
Okay, what else have you been doing? What have you been watching on the telly?
Watching on the telly, I have been watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. Have you read The Handmaid's Tale?
No, I haven't, but I have seen the promos for this.
It's a Margaret Atwood book, a novel, I should say, from 1985. And it's written about a dystopian future, and the story is told by a woman called Off Fred, which is means of Fred. So the world has gone to hell in a handbasket, and there's been some sort of revolution in the US, which of course is where everything happens in the dystopian futures. And there no one can reproduce anymore, so children are very, very rare. But all the women who have been able to have children when the revolution happens, they get, I want to say, captured and trained, and they're sent to live with couples, high up couples who, in the new regime, who can't have children. And it's quite disturbing that they're sent to them for sort of, I think, for periods of time, and if they don't get pregnant, then they move to the next house or the next house, whatever. But it's quite disturbing, and it's a little bit scary. And the first few episodes, I was sort of thinking, oh, you know, this is so sort of not... There's been a lot of play in the press in the US about, oh, the US is heading down this track. I think that's a little bit too much. But the last episode that I just watched the other night made it seem a little bit more sort of understandable where it came from, because I haven't read the book, so I didn't know the background. So I've just been watching it purely as a TV show. But it's quite interesting. I would recommend it. I enjoy it, but it's one of those things everyone's talking about, so I'm a joiner, so I have to watch it.
Are you a dystopian fan?
Not really. No. Not necessarily, but it's done in such a way that it's in a little bit engaging to me. I'm assuming you're not, but you thought I might be.
Yeah, well, I'm not at all, but I have a child who is a massive dystopian future fiction fan, and she just lives, and we struggle to watch movies together because, you know, she wants to watch all of those things, and whereas my second child, she wants to watch all the mushy sort of stuff that I want to watch. She's far more emotional, whereas my first child, she's just black and white of dystopian. And, yeah, that's her thing, and I'm just
is she watching this?
I haven't asked. I will ask if she's watching it. But, yeah. But when you were saying about the whole Trump thing, it made me think about, have you seen the movie that's coming out next month called Beatrice at Dinner?
Yes, I have. Yes.
I'm busting
John Lithgow.
To see that.
That's amazing.
Yes, yes. So if anyone hasn't seen the preview for that, it's Salma Hayek plays the role of this holistic medical practitioner, and she goes to a wealthy client's dinner party after her car breaks down. And the wealthy, one of the guys there is just, I mean, is he meant to be Trump, or does he just have a gazillion likenesses to Trump? I'm not sure.
I'm not really sure. But I don't think that there's anything that can be put on in the fictional world that's stranger than what's happening in the real world now. So I don't know what's going on there. But, yeah, it looks like a great, great movie. I just want to say, though, on the plane I saw Hidden Figures, which I had not seen before.
That's what I was going to talk about. That was exactly what I was going to talk about. I'd just written a little note not to forget to say, but yes, I watched that on the plane as well, and I thought it was amazing. I loved it. So that one's about the three African-American women who end up working for NASA and they're mathematicians, and that was just brilliant, wasn't it?
But apart from the fact that, I mean, that showed... It showed so many parts of society at the time and sort of the segregation issues, that there were rooms of people doing stuff that were computers before computers. I guess I knew that, but it just sort of really blew me away that that's actually, that there were people that was their job.
Well,
they were called a computer.
Yeah, and that they were called a computer. And can you remember that in Mad Men? There's a scene in Mad Men where the computer comes and it gets put in the middle and it literally takes up a whole room like computers did. Yeah. I don't know. When I began working, that's what computers were like. I remember I'd start working, you'd go to sort of temp somewhere when I was at university, and there'd be rooms that just held computers, like massive, massive instruments sort of thing. No, I thought that was a great one. But it, also, you're just saying that with the social side of it, and I'll attach this, and I'm going off on a tangent as well. Have you seen recently, I think it may be in the latest Oprah magazine, they've done a photographic series of flipping the stereotypes around. So there's a picture of a row of Asian women getting their nails done, and while white women are the manicurists and pedicurists and are doing their fingers and toes. And if someone had told me about the picture, I would have gone, no, I don't think I'd find that particularly striking. But when you see it, it's like, oh, wow. Do you know? And they've done three photos like that. They've got one where that's happening. They've got another one where a Hispanic woman is, sort of dressed beautifully and sitting in her house while a white woman is dressed in a maid's uniform looking after her. And the other one is a little white girl looking at a wall full of black dolls to choose from. And it's an amazing series, but I'll share that one too on the page for everyone. Sorry, off track on a tangent.
Excellent.
But that was probably...
No, I saw that this morning.
Media. You saw it too? Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
I saw it when you shared it, and yes. I think it was excellent. I really enjoyed it. I mean... as much as enjoy it, but I thought it was an excellent, as you say, when you say, oh, you tell me about the photo, you're not going to think it's that much, but when you see it, it really does have an impact.
Yeah, if someone would have told me about the concept, I would have gone, oh, I think we've kind of moved past that now. Do you know, like, I don't think that's a big deal. But then when you see it, it's like, oh, no, we haven't, because that's, I'm finding that really quite shocking. Yeah, it's made me.
And so I, a little bit on that tangent, and I know you've also read this, which I highly doubt anyone who's an expat hasn't read this week, but the Atlantic article of My Family Slave.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh. Tell me, so emotional. Tell me what went through your mind. What were you thinking of?
I was just thinking of my, I guess it was more related to my time in Hong Kong, because a lot of the helpers there were Filipinos, and we had a Filipino helper lived with us for 6 years, but in a totally different, and you sort of spend your life, I spent my whole time thinking, oh, but what happened with us was different. You know, what happened with us was different. You know, she was part of our family, you know, all this. I found it was a very, very sad article, but it was incredibly detailed and emotional. And just for the author to have gone through all that, you know, I've had a lot of different feelings. What about you?
Yeah. So if anyone hasn't read it, it's the story of, and I mean, it's an incredible story to start with, that they all lived like this for all those years, but the story of a Filipino family who immigrated to America, and they bought there, and he uses the word slave, with them. And she really was a slave, because she had been gifted, her name was Lola, and she was gifted to this, the mother of the family, as like a 14-year-old girl or something, wasn't it? And anyway, they had brought her into America and kept her there in their house for the next 40 years or so. And it was sort of how he explained that she was in the house. And yeah, I thought it was fascinating when Americans would come in and their neighbors would say, oh, who's that? And they just got away with it for all those years, because nobody really questioned that it was either, you know, a very quiet and shy aunt or a grandmother or whatever. Nobody ever said, hang on, this is a bit strange. And
the fact that she had, they had taken her, so her visa ran out. So later when she wanted to go home, they couldn't let her go, because she wouldn't have been allowed back in.
Yes.
And or they would have also been in trouble with immigration. So there was no way out for them in the end, for the mother.
Yes.
And so difficult.
Yeah. And also that they were able to go on and work and have a successful sort of immigration process, because they had this person at home constantly looking after their children and feeding them and cleaning and doing all of those things. Although the dad was a complete dud, the mum went on to become a doctor and did very well. But yeah, I'm with you, Nikki. I don't think there would be an expat who had staff that wouldn't have had to question some of the things that go on in their house. Like when they told the story of how Lola's teeth started to fall out, and I'm trying to think about the mother and, you know, not taking her to the dentist and not looking after
her. She's a doctor. The mother's a doctor.
Yes, and the mother was a doctor. It was like, oh, it was just shocking, wasn't it? But sorry, I interrupted. What were you going to say?
No, that's what I was saying. I was just going to say, if you've ever lived as an expat and had domestic help, and then you think about things that other people are going through, and you stop yourself because it's all a bit difficult and murky, and you think, I'm not like that. You know, this is the article you've got to read, because this takes it to the full extent of it, I think. So yeah. I don't know. Again, you can also listen to it. So The Atlantic also has an option for you to listen to it being read as opposed to reading, because it's quite a long read.
Yeah.
So if you prefer to listen, you can do that as well.
Yeah. And we all know someone who has treated a staff member incredibly poorly.
Yeah.
But this family, they take it to the end. Oh my gosh. And it makes you wonder how many people are out there like that too, Nikki. Like how many people from countries like the Philippines have been given a promise and are now stuck somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very difficult. Yeah. So just to lighten the mood a bit, Roseanne is returning to TV in 2018.
Really?
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I was never a Roseanne fan in the first place. Were you a Roseanne fan?
Not really, but I saw it the other day and I was like, there's this big, long sort of, Will and Grace is coming back too, which I'm a little bit excited about.
That excites me.
Yeah. But Roseanne, I was like, really? They're reviving Roseanne. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah.
So get the feedback from the listeners.
Yes.
So speaking of feedback from listeners, I just wanted to give some feedback from a listener, which I was so excited about. So I had a drink with someone who lives in Hamburg here a couple of weeks ago, and she had listened to our expat study buddies episode, and she sat down and thought about all the things she wanted to do. She wrote down a list. She spoke to her husband and they had a big conversation, and he said, why are you bringing this up? She said, well, I was listening to the podcast and I heard it. And now she's doing an online course, one of the free ones that we talked about on the show. So when she told me, it was like, oh my God, I nearly got teary because of the episode. She was obviously thinking about it, but it really made her sit down, take stock, and take action. So I was really thrilled and excited.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. No, that's very cool.
It's like we're helping someone in the real world.
What about on our speak pipe this week? Did anyone leave a little message?
Yes, on our speak, they did. Christine, they did. Christine in Doha left a message, and let me just play it for you now.
Hey, it's Christine from Doha, and just wanted to wish my two favorite fat expats a really great night at the Shangri-La for the Big Fat Expat Meetup. Wish I were there. I would love to hear the stories. I'm sure there's going to be some great ones. For some reason, I keep on picturing you two sitting in the makeup chair with cue cards practicing for the big event. But anyhow, hope it all goes really, really well. I think what you're doing is amazing. Sorry for the motorcycle noise in the background. I'm sitting outside my backyard, sipping on a glass of red wine, wishing I were there. Anyhow, really love what you're doing, and think it's you're filling a much needed gap. So best of luck, and can't wait to hear all about it on your next podcast.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that she's having a glass of red wine. I think that's very good. I think everybody should grab themselves a glass of wine and then leave us a message. I think that would be very
correct. Grab a glass of red wine, leave us a message, and then go to iTunes and rate us.
That could be dangerous. I wanted to say thank you to Christine, but also that is the sort of thing I talk about, where expat women can help each other out and not drag each other down. Do you know, like, that's a real pat on the back of you go, girls, and I don't know. I love the feeling behind it, and I think it's really, really cool that she took the time to leave us the message. Very, very cool. And I think Christine is in our fabulous expat women group. So if you too are a fabulous expat woman, please feel free to come and join the group on Facebook, because it's getting quite fabulous now. There's been lots I saw today. Yeah, there's some really good advice.
We're tackling all the big questions.
Yes.
I asked a very important question this week.
You did.
You'll just
you
have
did.
To join the group to see what it was.
Yes. You'll just have to join the group. Okay. So, Nikki, is that us done for the week?
That's us done for the week. And you're heading to Australia this week. Is that right?
I am. I have to go and pack up our house because we have sold our beach house, which is good because the building of the new beach house is underway and we need to be able to pay for it. So, yes, selling the beach house, going home to pack, which is a bizarre feeling because it's all going to be packed and sort of put in storage. And I'm not used to doing this without actually moving to another country at the same time, do you know? And I'm sure this is going to be a lot harder than what I'm giving it credit for, because I've done no prep work and really not organised. But let's just keep our fingers and toes crossed that it all works out for us, shall we?
Yes, let's. Okay, well, then we'll speak when you're in Australia next week, I guess.
Okay. All right. I'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.